Welcome to the IQ Meets EQ podcast. I'm Jackie Broman, Principal Solicitor at PBA Law and CEO of Legally Wise Women. And I'm here with Ush Danik, former corporate lawyer, then head of HR, and now an emotional intelligence coach. Good morning, Ush.
Morning, Jackie. How are you going?
Really well. Yourself?
Really, really good. Like I was saying, I'm on my little meditation retreat that starts on Thursday. So I'm like, yay, lots of stress to release over the next 5 days.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, it sounds like. So 5 days?
5 days.
Amazing. And is that what, South Coast of New South Wales, or is it just like in Sydney somewhere?
No, South Coast, yeah.
Yeah, so even the nature and things just, yeah, makes me crave.
Yeah, I'm going to document it a little bit. I'm going to do a couple of little video blogs at the end of every day just for like 5-6 minutes, and yeah, I'll share that with the viewers for next week.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, sounds so good. It's been like 3 weeks again since we spoke. It's just gone so fast.
I know. Time's coming so quickly. Can't believe it's going to be like end of May next week, seriously. No, end of the first week of May. It's not even end of May. I just fast forwarded us 3 weeks.
But it's like that, and particularly because they were all short weeks in April.
I know, that's what it is. We've had like what, three short weeks, haven't we? So
we have.
Yeah.
A bit crazy. Yeah. How is your meditation going? You're loving it?
Yeah, I am. I like it. It's just, I can't imagine not doing it now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just become so ingrained. But like you said, it's finding the time. It's that, you know, diligence to go right. It's as important as, you know, I just look at it as important as going for a shower now. So like I put it in that category of it's a non-negotiable.
Yeah. You were just challenging me before we started recording because I've slipped and I'm not doing it twice a day anymore. And I don't prioritize it as much as doing a shower. I don't prioritize as much as exercise or food or sleep, but I know it's important. So once a day at the moment is what I'm doing. Maybe if I try and reprioritize it.
But like I said, you've got to do it when you're ready. But then look at the difference, right? You prioritize your exercise over your meditation. I don't. I'm like, screw that stuff. But it's just what stage of lifestyle you're at that you put as important. So yeah, I wouldn't even beat yourself up. The fact that you're doing one a day is like huge compared to where it was for both of us like 12 months ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's really settling, and it makes you more mindful for the rest of the day as well. So there's ongoing benefits, even just one.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm. Mm. However, of course, two is better than one.
You'll do it. You'll do it when you're ready.
Yeah, that's right. One day it'll fit. I'm sure it will. In the last 3 weeks as well, since I spoke to you, I had COVID too. So done and dusted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've had that experience now. It was super annoying.
Did you stay, like, were you like bedridden for a week, or were you still high functioning? Because some people have been really high functioning, other people have been knocked out.
I was still pretty high functioning, which was why I was frustrated, because it meant I was confined to the house. And, you know, even during lockdowns, we were at least allowed outside. So that was really hard. I had 3 days of a really sore throat, 2 days of fairly high fever where I was fairly delirious and really couldn't get up much. But then otherwise it was not even as bad as a head cold for me. So it's really interesting how varied the symptoms have been.
But yeah, it's good. It's out the way now, right? So hopefully for another 6 months, they said that you shouldn't get sick.
Yep. But even just avoiding colds and things, it just made me realize again, like, it's been so long since I've even had a cold or been a little bit sick that, you know, I'd slightly let go on the hand sanitizing. I'm quite bad at often having my hands on my face. I don't chew my nails, but quite often I flick a nail in my mouth. You just can't put hands on your face.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm a bit more relaxed now because I'm like, you know what? It's like kids going to daycare, right? Like, you've got to just build that immunity again, because if you're like going to constantly be like, oh, I can't do this, can't do that, going to hand sanitize a million times a day, you're going to end up getting more sick. in my opinion, anyway.
Potentially, you get a bigger bug and your body can't do it. Yeah, I mean, got to weigh it up both sides, don't you? Because if you look after your body really well and you've got a really high immunity, then hopefully if you come across one of those bugs, you don't even get it.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you've done and dusted with out and about now.
Yeah, I know. Tick. Not an experience that is something that I looked forward to, but anyway. Your retreat sounds much better.
I know. I can't wait. Can't wait now. So yeah. I'll be off tomorrow. And I'm going to miss my doggy though.
Yeah, I know, the pets. It's amazing how much you love them, and then you just, when you're away from them, you send them like good vibes, like, I'm here, I'm coming back soon, I love you.
I know. Actually, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, just tell Snoopy that you're going to be away, because she said, you know, she'll know. Because I was like, oh, I was like, it's so funny. I was thinking, what if she thinks like I've left her or abandoned her, you know? But I've actually got a dog sitter who's come into the house. So in a way it's a bit easier because she's not going anywhere. So I think that will make it easier because she'll know that I'll eventually come back home.
Yeah, she's in her space still. Your stuff's still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want to be meditating and then stressing about my dog. But yeah, I'll have a bit of a talk to her today.
Yeah. Good. Let's jump in then and listen to our guest this week. I feel like, you know, the energy of this conversation was amazing. She, you know, this is Kate Osborne and she's a bit of a powerhouse. I'm really impressed by her. She's had quite a powerful career, both as an employee within a large organization, Flight Center, when it was in boom time. And so quite young, she was managing multiple locations and large teams. And then she went into a business coaching franchise and built her franchise up quite huge, but then had shocking experience, really, about being taken advantage of when she was giving birth and is pretty much started from scratch again. But I mean, what she's trying to do, particularly for women in Queensland, women in business, and doing a whole lot of work in the community up there, is pretty amazing too. So let's have a listen. Kate, good afternoon. Welcome to the IQ Meets EQ podcast. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And I love your name. I love the IQ Meets EQ.
Yes, I should tell you their story a little bit then, and it's good for our listeners to remember as well, because originally it was like I was IQ, Ush was EQ, but it's sort of become our both of our journeys to increasing EQ, and also like a deep dive into the EQ of all of our guests and how, in fact, it's probably the key to success.
That's fantastic. I taught a group of coaches years ago the difference between IQ, EQ, SQ and WQ.
Ooh, what's WQ?
The wow quotient. You know, so as women, you know, wow is when you get all the loads of washing done and you've made the equivalent as your husband and you've picked up the kids and you've got the dinner ready. You know, so it was like, wow, not only have you done all the normal checkbox things, but what else could you slip into the day? Ring your mother and say a quick hello, or visit a friend and drop over a casserole who's sick. You know, how can we keep stretching ourselves to bring more wow into our life?
I love that one. Very good. Maybe it's EQ meets WQ.
Yes, maybe.
All right. Well, before we get too sidetracked, I wanted to go back and ask what you wanted to be when you were growing up.
I actually really wanted to be a counsellor in a school. I was bullied when I was at school, starting from grade 3, and it sort of progressed all the way through high school. And I never really quite understood why people didn't like me or couldn't love me for who I was, or if I was shining a bit too bright, why that was a problem for them. And so, yeah, that was really, you know, and then I went on an outback adventure with my sister and brother and came back and thought, no, actually, I'm just going to be a park ranger in Kakadu. I'm going to give up the modern world and go live in the bush. I loved it up there. So they were the two guiding things when I started my psychology degree.
Wow. So did you have a good counsellor?
No. In fact, I had a mother and it was a repeating pattern. She'd had a similar situation. We both were in all girls schools. And so each afternoon I'd break down what would happen. And then she'd tell me her horror story, which was usually 10 times worse than mine. And I left feeling more sorry for her than me. And so she really equipped me more than counseled me, because she said, you know what, it's either jealousy, some of it's envy, some of it's, you know, that they've got problems at home. So it's compassion. You know, why don't we think of it like this and reframe it? Yeah, so she was more my mentor than a counsellor.
Yeah, nice. And it sounds like passing on some wisdom and insight rather than bitterness, which it could also have been, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And she was a very powerful, strong woman, my mother. And so I could see that quite easily, you know, she could give it as well as she could take it. And so sometimes that was handy. We could have a laugh and plot and plan, you know, mean things in our imagination that we do to these girls. But, you know, we never did them, of course. We just imagined.
Mm-hmm.
What would we do without our mother?
You leave high school.
Yes.
And go to study psychology straight away. Is that?
Yes. I did a double major at UQ. But when I finished and was ready to go on to master's, my brother announced his engagement. And so there was an opportunity. He was getting married in New Orleans to an American girl he'd met in London. And so I spoke to the university and they said, you can just defer. You've got up to 3 years to complete. And I thought it's a good opportunity. I had family traveling at that stage. I'm youngest of six kids and everyone was traveling. And so I took 2 years to do an overseas working holiday to base myself. So I went through America and Canada, based myself in London and traveled to 38 countries in 2 years. So it was wonderful.
Yeah, amazing. Wow, that life experience as well, like just the blossoming of you, I can imagine, during that time. How much more did you feel you and feel your sense of the world after that?
Well, I guess, you know, I'd overheard my sister and brother talking that I wouldn't last 12 weeks overseas. I had never done anything on my own. My friend picked me up for uni and dropped me home. So I was very insulated in a very comfortable world. And about week 12, they were spot on. I'd run out of money. I'd broken up with, you know, who I thought was the love of my life, found out that he was cheating on me, and I had nowhere to live. And so I was very close to coming home because I had a return ticket, but they encouraged me. My friends sort of said, you know, stick it out. And I ended up doing care work. I looked after elderly people that were dying in their homes. And that was really the shaping moment of my life. I looked after two very, very wealthy individuals, one with severe dementia and the other one had 3 weeks to live and he had the sixth share in Coca-Cola. And he was miserable. And so I thought money solved our challenges. You know, I was a naive 21-year-old with no money, thinking if I just had money, I would be a little happier. He had more money than he could ever consume, and yet he was miserable. So, yeah, that was the big turning point for me. I challenged him and said, you know, how old are you? He said, 73. I said, you're miserable? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I'm 21. I'm miserable. Teach me what not to do so I don't end up like you. And he had this little glint in his eye and he said, we'll start tomorrow. And he had one objective. He wanted to teach me how to think. And he said, if we achieve that, we will have achieved enough. And it took me 7 months. He lived on. I think I gave him some purpose in his life. He lived on, and the seventh month we celebrated my first original thought. It was very exciting. So he was Cambridge graduate, very articulate, a barrister, merchant banker, very smart man. And, you know, the job was to undo my learning.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What an amazing experience. And I suppose in some ways that landed in your lap out of desperation because you're running out of cash and life-changing.
Found each other in our lowest moment. But it was a blessing, and I nursed him all the way through till he passed away. And that was a huge part of me, I guess, learning about faith and, you know, just to follow the next natural step. And, yeah, I came back and then got a job with Flight Centre Limited. One of the things that Mr. Zollinger had helped me to identify is if you want to learn to think, you've got to surround yourself with entrepreneurial thinking. So he set me a challenge to go and join a business that was growing exponentially and layer morals and ethics along the pathway. And then when you've learned that, jump into the next business vehicle, master that, you know, so master all the business vehicles of the day, put morals and ethics as an underlay. And he suggested I'd never be out of work. And that's been actually the good prediction that has come true.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that you need to be employed though now either, do you? Because you make your own.
Yeah, Flight Centre was a wonderful launching off entrepreneurial opportunity. Screw Turner at the time was a graduate of UQ also. And he had a fast track entrepreneurial series that he was recruiting back through the university. So you just needed to have 10 countries travelled and a higher education. They were his two KPIs. And then, yeah, he basically, the company was growing at 200% per quarter. So he was just trying to fill leadership positions as quickly as possible, and they were bringing in high-end trainers from the US and Europe. And, yeah, I was one of the lucky recipients. And so after 2 years, I had two stores and a combination of it was about $7 million turnover, and I was 25 years old. And that really held me in good stead around management and systems and processes. And then I was poached by one of my top clients to take over his company. So that's how I jumped from Flight Centre into, you know, I guess the profession that found me. I never really went looking, but leadership development, coaching and mentoring.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's the psychology of leaders, isn't it, really, is coaching. Right.
Yeah, and I think the coaching industry, when I started, there were 620-something men and two women, one in Canada and one in New Zealand. So I really culturally, I went from Flight Centre, which was a lot of females and, you know, fabulous men, but predominantly female, into an all-masculine environment. And it was wonderful because I got to see the complete opposite of IQ, as you talk about. What does IQ look like in a business? It's really high respect for yourself, you know, playing business at the highest level. And so for me, I really enjoyed that 5 years there of just, you know, being a sponge and just absorbing how men, you know, actually through the framework of business make really savvy commercial decisions. And it built me a global network. You know, the company grew to 1,300 franchisees, and I was one of the global coaches and trainers, as well as I had 11 franchisees of my own. And, you know, so it was a good playground.
So 5 years there only takes you to about 30.
Yes, that's it. Yes. And I pretty much, you know, I'm a real goal setter.
Yeah.
I had on my plan, I'd be pregnant at 30. I would like 3 to 4 children, please, before 35 and, you know, be retired and be able to be a full-time mum on a full-time income. I was very fixated on my plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing was really looking like it was going to get in my way. So, yeah, I had my first daughter at 31.
Wow. Okay. So you really did make your plan happen as closely as you could.
Yeah, it was a bit wonky. I think, you know, gender does play a role when you're in those bigger corporations, without a doubt. You know, none of my peers were getting pregnant, having babies and stepping out.
Yes, no.
That was a real difference. The journey that I had to take, I had to squeeze my 40-year career into 5 because I really didn't want to lose my income potential and learning opportunities. And my husband just refused to give birth. It just, you know, he really would have been the natural choice because he was so good with his health and he managed his stress levels, and it would have been an ideal solution. But unfortunately, you know, I had the apparatus. So it was the one thing I couldn't leverage. I had to give birth. But he stayed at home. So he was a full-time stay-at-home dad for 3 years and part-time for 6.
Oh, good on him.
So that helped me to be able to juggle, you know, that work-life blend we talk about. We can never balance it, but we blend it all together.
Yeah. So you were still working coaching coming up to the first pregnancy.
Yes.
So what was the pushback or they couldn't get their head around?
At that stage, I had created an asset that, you know, essentially was earning more than the master franchise of the state. And in franchising, that's sort of not the done thing. And so I guess when I was in labor, I was quite vulnerable. I was taking time out to have a baby. They cut all my franchise agreements. So when I came out of that maternity, you know, sort of, well, I didn't even get through maternity leave. My team was sort of, I could sense there was not something great and they were trying to protect me from it. But yeah, the master franchisor had approached each of my team to suggest that he could cut the licenses and they could go in business in competition against me. And that's what they did. And so within 4 weeks, I realized that $10 million projected asset that was all done, like I crossed every T and dotted every I, it was done to perfection. I had an in-house events coordinator and general manager and marketing managers, telemarketers. I had leases. I had the whole infrastructure. Well, without the coaches, it was very difficult to maintain that. And I'd trained all those coaches, so, you know, and my intellectual property. So, yeah, that was a big learning, a huge, but in hindsight, you know, so often we think things happen to us, not things happen for us. And, you know, right around the corner was a big GFC. And so that global financial crisis, I didn't know was coming.
Yeah.
However, what happened in that swift mediation that I had to go in when I was really trying to learn how to breastfeed that day, yeah. I also had to go in and do mediation and secure enough cash flow to keep trading.
Yeah.
You know, the blessing in disguise was I had cut all of my debts. I owned a company that was cash rich because I had 90 clients. And so I became, you know, the most profitable coach overnight, but very busy. And my husband stayed at home to look after the kids. And so, you know, when we talk about gender and work with femme economy, you know, it was what was happening in the background. You know, my husband was really scared and really scared for me, but also just scared in general. And my plan was always to have 3 or 4 kids in quick succession. And we'd had this conversation and he sort of said, you know, Kate, while there's debt, there's no more babies. And boy, did that drive me like a red rag to a bull. And my biggest challenge, my failure there was I didn't disclose that to my team. I didn't talk to my lawyers, my accountants, you know, I didn't sit them down and say, look, my actual dream is to have another baby. You know, can we look at how that can be possible? And bring Kent, my husband, along into those conversations, because what I did was actually the stupidest thing I could have done. I paid everybody out cash in 6 months. And obviously the unit trust that I'd had that was set up, that my business partner, who is an accountant, had set up, you know, we basically had to, you know, send her on her way. She was one of the prime reasons why the coaches left me. So, you know, I had a big learning in leadership in that moment, but she hadn't set the unit trust up correctly. And so it was deemed as after-tax profit. So I think my PAYG went up to $28,000 a month. My break-even, actually, my break-even was $28,000 a month, which included this pay-as-you-go, paying the tax on what I'd paid my investors out. And there were so many other, I started lecturing at Griffith University in the Excellence in Franchising division, and the head of Griffith said, why didn't you just offer them equity in your next venture? And it was just, you know, when you have that really, I spoke to lawyers, I spoke to accountants, I spoke to mentors, not anybody had thought of that solution. So in hindsight, ladies, you know, well, we need to learn how to be vulnerable and talk the real issues, because that payout with the tax department took me 10 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it's the lesson that never stopped giving.
That's right. I was going to say the lesson that was hard to learn.
It was hard to learn, but I tell you, when my son turned 11, boy, did he have a party. So, you know, I paid everyone out. I got pregnant. He came along exactly 16 months after my daughter, and I had those two kids that I wanted, and then fighting for the third was another whole journey. But yeah, that's where gender really has affected me, is just balancing career and motherhood and blending in, you know, the learnings. Yeah, I just see it as, it can be an advantage though. If we use our sisters, it can be a real advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, like, just being taken advantage of when you were vulnerable, when you were still just recently given birth. Like, I don't know what the thought process there is on the other side. It's just, and it's not that long ago.
Yeah, that's it. It's not that long ago. That's right. My brother is a barrister. I had a benefit that my legal team suggested, you know, to call the founder of the organization and just remind him that my brother is a barrister. And, you know, that worked in my favor. So network is always important. I think I was the only case where the founder paid for legal counsel against his own ML, because the media injustice of it would have just, you know, been disastrous for that organization. And so he did the right thing. And through mediation, we actually got to the core. And the core issue was he genuinely didn't think I liked him. And so, you know, that was my intuition, was there's something else here, there's a block here, there's, I don't understand why. And when, you know, we were able to sit with a mediator, and I explained, the very first day that I had met him is when I'd taken a pregnancy test and it came out positive, but I was waiting for the doctor to confirm. And isn't that silly? Like, I knew I was pregnant, but, you know, you have to go to a doctor and a blood test. And we were going out for dinner to celebrate. And he'd surprised me with a spot visit and said, I've booked a table. I want to take you out for lunch. I want to get to know the great Kate Osborne. And, you know, my reaction was, I'm so sorry, I'm booked. Like, I've got to go. Like, I'm just on my way to an appointment. And he really felt let down in that moment, because his intention was he was really looking forward to meet me, and he felt like I had, you know, shut him down or snubbed him or what have you. And so when we got through that, he actually became one of my best advocates, and and I sold my business for a 3x multiple, and I couldn't have done it without him on side. And so that mediation really showed me that you just keep being curious, lean in when there's conflict, ask a great question, you know, what was it, why did you take that time to do that? And yeah, in the end, I think, you know, there were many positives that came out of that process.
The power that mediation can have, it can be healing if it's done right. And how interesting that, you know, the underlying thing, you know, we're never upset for the reason that we think we are. And for him to even be, I suppose, insightful enough to realize that that was probably the core, because, you know, people gloss over things all the time, don't they?
And, you know, in mediation, the mediator was not keen to ask that question. I said, just ask it, just genuinely, in between the coaches, when he started to say, she doesn't like me, she never liked me, he got up and the mediator grabbed him and like slammed him against a wall. Yeah. Shut up, stop talking. And so from then on, they said, Kate, what do you want? Like, you know, let's settle this now. So, you know, I don't think he meant to disclose it how he did. And of course then the in-house counsel was like, what, you have done all this because you didn't like it? But something in my soul settled. Mm-hmm. It was, oh, that makes sense, because nothing else made sense to me why this had happened. But you know, there you go, learnings.
Wow, lots of learnings. What are you most passionate about now?
Look, I think blending. I'm really starting to find that situation took me to some coaches that did spiritual coaching and healing. And, you know, that was a really freaky part. I used to call it the freaky coaching, you know. So I stood up in front of all of those men at the next conference who had sort of seen me as a little Miss Optimistic, you know, what's she going to do now? And I really shared with them the difference between the IQ, the EQ, and I put it on a quadrant. So up the left-hand axis was respect for self, and the bottom axis was respect for others. And as you box that in, if you've got high respect for yourself but low respect for others, you rely on IQ a little bit too much. And if you meet people like that, then you just have to keep telling them, you're so smart. Oh, my God, you're so smart. Can you help me with this? And really leverage that. Whereas, you know, when we can really be humble, you know, and we have low respect for ourselves, but we have higher respect for others, you know, because I kept asking the question, what didn't I ask? Why didn't I see this coming? And so I sourced myself a spiritual coach, someone who could work on a soul level for me. Mystics, all sorts of wacky people started crossing my path and offering to support and coach me. And, you know, that was actually the key. The key were these, you know, unqualified people with no scientific, no psychology degrees, but they were peaceful and they were at peace with their life. And so I think that's what I'm becoming most passionate about. I've really learned how to blend in my coaching, that some of it's IQ, because you know what, you just need to know some stuff, right? You need to know how to set up an entity and trade and sell and all that stuff. But some of it's emotional intelligence. When you feel lack of respect for yourself and respect for others, you get angry. And how do you mask that? How do you contain that? Some of it's soul quotient, which is, hang on, your curriculum's different to their curriculum. And if you're here on this journey right now and this is the problem you're facing, it's probably the right one. So let's broaden our perspective. Let's take a breath. Let's surrender to this. And so, yeah, that's really where I'm moving now. It's really hard to say out loud because I've never marketed myself in this way, but I'm really attracting clients that say, you know, I want that wow quotient. I want to blend it all together. I want to be a great wife, I want to stay married. And that for me was a big journey. Like there was moments where I had to get marriage counselling, and I remember asking my counsellor, you know, how do I respect him? Like, do I pretend? If I don't feel respect, am I meant to pretend? And she was like, Kate. And I was really like asking a serious question. I'm like, I'm really finding it hard to deal with these situations. And I can remember this turning point where she said, you know, he's going to die. And I thought, oh my God, she's got a premonition, you know? And she went, Kate, we all die. And everyone dies. You die, he dies. So go home and fight. Go home and fight with him. If he's still alive, fight with him. Laugh with him. You know, make magic moments with him, because her husband had widowed her 30 years ago. And she had this picture on the mantelpiece, and she said, some days I walk past and I'm like, why? Why did you leave me? The next day she's ignoring him. She doesn't even remember he exists. And then some days she's really angry, like, why did you leave me here? Why do I have to pay all the bills? And so she said, it doesn't end energetically when they're gone. If he's still alive, go home and tell him how you feel. And that was the turning point for me in my relationship. I went, every time he just put the bin out, I was like, thank you. And he's like, you're welcome. No, really, it's one less thing I had to do today. And I had this filter of what would it be like if he were dead? I'd do it all, right? I'd have to do it all. So anything he was doing, I genuinely was like, oh, thanks. I didn't see that load of washing finished and you hang it out. That's fantastic. And it came from the right place. It came from a gratitude. So that's a bit about where I've been learning.
Wow. It really is. That's a great reminder. I often think to myself, it's such a privilege to share your life with someone and to know someone so intimately and not to take it for granted at all.
Yeah.
And just to remember that privilege.
It can be, you know, a gratitude diary. I had to start morning, noon and night, like notice the things that he'd do and show them. Thank you. These are the things I've noticed. And his respect for himself started to build.
Yeah.
And then over time, his income started to increase and his work-life blend started to be better. And, you know, but it started with those conversations together. So, yeah, I'm really passionate about couples. I did a founders female keynote, and there was 47 female founders and 2/3 were divorced.
Mm.
And so it was only just when Sharon Honeybell introduced me and said, you know, Kate's been married mostly happily for 22 years is how she suggested. And I got a standing ovation. I hadn't even said anything. They're like, wow, we want to learn about that. How have you been married for 22 years? So, yeah, I see some successful professionals that come to me and their business is on a roll and they're really expanding and growing, but they haven't got that actual work-life blend at home with their kids and their husband. And so, you know, nothing's off the table when we work together. It's sort of put whatever your irritation is and let's work through it.
Wonderful to know. Oh, all right. To be respectful of your time.
Yes.
What advice would you go back and give your 21-year-old self?
Oh, dump that boyfriend. Oh, my God. He was such an asshole. And it's so funny that I went to an under-12s rugby comp and there he was. He had a child the same year that I had and they were competing against each other in the same thing. And I hadn't seen him in 25 years and here he was back in my life. So it's been really healing that he actually apologized. I was a horrible, horrible person and I'm so sorry. What an idiot I was. That was quite healing. But, yeah, my advice would have been dump him first, you know. Mm. She would never have done it, but anyway, there you go. My advice.
Well, that's right. The 21-year-old wouldn't have listened.
No, she would have said, "You don't understand."
Yes. All right. And bringing in this blended self, what sort of daily rituals and things do you have in your own practice that keep you centered and well? And focused and all of those good things.
Yeah, look, when I first started coaching, I realized how important, you know, the delivering healthy enlightened millionaires was. So the healthy portion, I think, you know, so often we do everything for everybody else and we don't necessarily look after ourselves well enough. And so my daily rituals, you know, even if I have to get up earlier than everyone, start the day with some meditation and intention, some reading, some exercise, you know, just get my own oxygen mask on first before I try to help everyone else. And that means on a Sunday I plan my entire week. Like I'm very, the meals are planned, the shopping's done, the kids understand where I'm working, where I'm sleeping over in Brisbane or back. And so it's a well-oiled machine in order to be able to achieve what I achieve. So Sundays is a really important day to get my head around and the intention for the week for everybody. And that's something that I really encourage others to do.
Wonderful. Great advice. So other than Femme Economy website and LinkedIn, where else can people find out about you?
Yes. Yeah, so we've just launched a business, Coco Matrix. It stands for Kate Osborne, Kent Osborne. So that's my husband, Coco, K-O-K-O. And really it's a matrix of all the questions. If you could ask them in the correct sequence, that would eliminate conflict. And that's essentially, you know, Kent and I, we don't fight anymore, which I think is a wonderful thing. Sometimes he cries, sometimes I cry, but very, very rarely do we argue, and it's because of that process. So yeah, cocomatrix.com and just Kate Osborne on Instagram or Facebook.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and sharing. So much honesty there and so much to unpack. I can't wait to speak to Usha about it.
Fabulous. Well, I'm grateful that I could contribute, and thank you for having me on the show.
You're so welcome.
Thanks, Jackie.
All right, first impressions, Usha, what do you reckon?
I like this. I have to say this was one of my top 10 if I was going to pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the realness and just the story of what she's been through. And I actually just resonated with so much of it as well. Like I really understood, and I felt quite connected with her story, especially at the beginning when she was saying about, you know, being bullied and then talking to her mom about it. And it's like, it just reminded me of how me and Gia are, you know, and some of the stuff that I was bullied through school, and so has Gia been, and how we talk about it. And I think, to be honest, I think listening to her story, that experience has really made her resilient throughout the rest of her life, even though she probably doesn't realize it. And it was an awful time when she was bullied. But I think it's really helped her for what she went through later.
I didn't realize you were bullied at school. I think you've spoken about that.
We'll have to do a podcast on it. I've actually tried to hunt down my bully because it was so bad. I haven't found her though.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we should find a guest that specifically does a whole lot around bullying.
Should do that. So yeah, no, that really resonated, just that part of the story as well, and how it's, yeah, how it really built probably her capacity to deal with what she went through later as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think she gives her mum full credit though for being able to, again, be quite emotionally intelligent with a daughter without that bitterness that I mentioned, because, you know, I think that many others could have been, you know, resentful, vindictive, and instead of playing games with it and putting it into context, just have made it worse.
Yeah. But what a story, you know, building that business up to the, you know, to the nature it was and so successful, and then almost like have it just ripped from under you, right? And taken away.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it was strategically planned that way, that, I mean, you could see that it wasn't just a whim of these people around her. They could see, you know, and were preparing for her to be at her most vulnerable. And there was a moment in the interview, because I listened to it again myself as well, when she was talking about how scared her husband was as well, and the people, she said something like who is behind us, or who is, you know, the people that we are responsible for. And I guess what an eye-opener for men around her to see how a powerful woman can be brought down just for the sake that she's a powerful woman.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's really shocking. Even hearing it just makes you feel, you know, really angry, really pissed off at the level of, you know, suffering and treatment that she was, you know, given. But you know what, like she said, when she went into that mediation, it's almost like, okay, these things happen for a reason, and she went through that experience. It's only with hindsight we can say that, though. You know, going through it, it's like, well, yeah, whatever, it's really painful. But I do like the fact how she also reflected on the fact that, you know, she should have communicated also more around, you know, how her husband was fearful and what she needed and the fact that, you know, that financial security was really important so she could have the kids. And because I think when we do talk about those big decisions, it does shape and change the direction that we go in. But I wonder, I did reflect afterwards when she was speaking why she didn't share it. And was that just, oh, I didn't think it was important? Or was it that I don't want to say that out loud because I'll be judged for it?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Maybe all of the above. And also that, you know, as women, we tend to go, well, I can compartmentalize my life and do it all. And so this part of my life doesn't need to know what the bigger picture is or what I'm trying to do with these other parts. But yeah, that was really interesting because as she went through the mediation and the fallout of her business, the advice she was getting was based on what they thought they were making, her advisors were making assumptions about what she needed. But in fact, what she needed was different because she didn't communicate that. The advice she got was not great and then had a fallout of 10 years. But the way she could reframe it, and like you said, in hindsight, easier to reframe and be appreciative of the ebbs and flows and how it all worked out ultimately. But that brings it back around to the skill that her mother was building too, wasn't it? About being able to reframe a situation.
Mm. Yeah, I can't imagine as well, like 10 years to, you know, pay that off. That happened to me actually when I first started my business. I had really bad tax advice before I got my accountant and didn't pay the right amount of tax. And I had this insane tax bill. I think it was like $60,000 or something crazy. And it took about two and a half years, yeah, to pay it off. But and I know that feeling, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, so much resilience for what she's been through. And I love that she was like so high performing, you know, set her goals so early on and, you know, just ticked them off. And I think also because she is that type of person, it is a bit harder to deal with some of these blows because you're almost like, well, hang on a minute, that blow in my life, it wasn't planned. You know, it wasn't meant to be there and it throws you off your track, right? Because I think the other side of being such a goal achiever is that you're not as nimble.
Mm.
Because they're fixed on, okay, by this time I want this done, by this time I want this done. But I think she had the best of both. She had that high goal setting, but she was also able to be nimble and adapt to some of the stuff that came her way, which is great.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because as a perpetual goal setter myself, you often, as part of setting a larger goal, is you set the how and you think that there's only one way of getting there and it has to be done this way and here are the stages and here's the time frame for the stages. But in fact, it often works out very differently or every time to what you plan. So, I mean, that's a learning in itself, isn't it? That nothing ever quite works out how you plan.
Yeah, look, I'm a really big believer in that. I know it sounds cliched, you know, that these things happen for a reason, but I really believe that's the truth. Like, you know, who knows what would have happened if, you know, she didn't have that mediation or she just stayed where it was or if it, you know, grew too quickly. And like she said, the GFC hit or it impacted her on being able to have more children or she got sick. Like, there's so many variables that I just think sometimes we've just got to embrace, you know, the journey that we're thrown into sometimes, even if it's not what we had picked, and trust that there's a bigger plan for it and for us that's, you know, yeah, like, you know, one of my sayings is, you know, when you're rejected, like rejection or any of that is just redirection. It's literally just bouncing you into a different direction. It's not the end. It's just like a ping pong ball, almost, that visual that, okay, it wasn't meant to be there, but it's going to be in this direction instead because it's better for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to like impart some of the learning from becoming more of a meditator. You know, the suffering and stuff that we put ourselves through in our life of the guilt and the drive and all these things about goals that we set for ourselves and the way we think things should happen, the suffering is all created by our own preferences in our head, isn't it?
Yes.
So if we weren't so upset by, no, that's not the way this is supposed to happen, or that's not how that person's supposed to react, or that's not the way, I don't like it happening this way, blah, 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 we're creating it all ourselves. Whereas, as you say, if we let a lot of the preferences go, we would allow the flow of life a lot more.
Yeah, that's one of the big things I think I've taken on from this meditation is you're right. We're conditioned to suffer a certain way and the reality of it. And it's based on our paradigms, right? So, you know, like for you, you're triggered when I challenged you about your two meditations, clearly. And because for you, it means you've let yourself down. It means you failed. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't look at it that way. I just look at it and go, you know, is there a different way to do it? And why are we so conditioned to go, we don't have time, or we should do this, or, you know, it's you're right. It's just a ping pong, like just let it go and do what you can. And if you can't do it, you can't do it. You know, why do we choose to be so much harder on ourselves for certain things in our lives than we do for other things?
Right. That's right. And it, you know, then once you start talking like that, it brings you around to thinking about the purpose of life, doesn't it? The purpose of life is not to go through life just achieving our goals, is it?
No. And it's also, you know, the more we do the meditation, you also learn that it's about we're attached to it. We don't need to be attached to it. You know, don't be so attached to the experiences or the goals that we set. And I am actually, I have to say, I'm actually more free-flowing in my business than I have ever been. But before that would have just stressed me out going, oh my God, I haven't done this, or I haven't done it that way, or I haven't had enough networking, or I haven't done enough freaking marketing. But I've been the most de-stressed that I have ever been in the last months when I've actually just let go. And it's not that I've got complacent or I've become lazy. It's not that, even though I did question it a couple of weeks ago. And I asked myself, am I just more lazy? I'm like, no, fuck no, I'm not. I'm not lazy. I just don't have that strong level of attachment to how things should be. It's almost like I've let go of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worry about that too, that lazy factor. Like, but again, it's just yourself telling yourself off and judging yourself when you're probably doing a whole lot of unnecessary busy stuff just to fill in and make yourself feel better, which wasn't effective. If that sort of makes sense. But there, I mean, there's so much in Kate's interview to pull out, because what we're talking about then sort of brings me around to this wow quotient, this WQ that Kate brought up right at the start and then later on again, because I was also a little bit taken aback by that in some ways, because I was like, well, trying to achieve WQ is potentially just another way of flogging a woman. To go, you have to, because if we start putting the have to's and the should's, you know, there's all these other elements that we could be doing, and we do so much more. And how do we get to that wow quotient? But I get that the wow quotient's supposed to come from another place of flow and ease and doing so much from a different place than from guilt and should. But I think that it does take a level of then SQ, where she was talking about soul or spiritual quotient, to be able to bring in that wow quotient at all. Because if the wow quotient comes first without the self-awareness and the flow, then you're just going to be a slave and a martyr.
Yeah, and you're right. I thought of that initially, and I had to challenge my thinking about the wow quotient, because it was also the way that Kate explained it, was that, you know, it sounded like, what else can you do that makes you better? Mm. And it almost goes against my thinking of, well, I don't want a list of extra things to do. Mm. I'm trying to let go of that. But for me, I think the wow quotient is, it's just being more aware. I don't think it's adding things. So it's being more aware, because you've got more time to go, hey, you know what? That friend needs a phone call, and I'm just going to like pick up the phone and give her a ring. So I don't look at it as an achievement of another thing I've ticked off. Mm-hmm. I look at the wow quotient as, do I have space in myself and the ability to give more to someone else? And you can only do that when you're not, you know, like you were saying, you booked out like every minute of your day, which is great when you're looking at it from, you know, from the perspective of high performing intellect business, but also there's so much goodness in going, you know what, every couple of weeks, I'm going to have a day off, or I'm going to finish at 1 o'clock, because I'm going to have that space to see what else needs to be done in my life that's not work. And it's just that balance. I think you and I are the same. We're both just such high achievers, and we're both so conditioned to work a certain way. And I think studying law and going through all of that has also, you know, made us more into that space, whereas both of us now are getting that balance. And I think for us, getting that balance is a wow factor.
Mm-hmm. Rather than balance, it's blend.
Blend, yeah. Yeah. And then it's removing the guilt, fear, and shame also. Yeah. And when people think, like, both of us, if we look at our journey of, forget even meditation, but just, you know, our journey of when we first met to do the podcast and meeting all these women, you know, we did care what people thought. We did care about how we were achieving and all the stuff that we had to do. And now we're like different people now. Mm. And, you know, we're more about the blend, more about, we've got to do what's right for us, not just what's right for other people.
That's right. And more courageous because of it, I think, too, because we're more willing to dive into harder conversations because we want to explore them. We don't care. It's not about the perception of listeners. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just juggling. And, you know, it's that image that comes to my head. You know, you see those memes of those women that got like 20 hands and they're like trying to do everything, like hold a baby, cook dinner, do the washing, be on the phone. It's not that anymore.
No. Mm. Mm. At least it's moving away from that. That's true. Yeah, there's so many other things that I'd noted down about this episode with Kate. There was having, when she started realizing she needed more in her life, and then she talked about having spiritual people just started crossing her path and sort of coming into her awareness. That was really interesting to hear about too, which is in a way very similar to both of us over the last couple of years too. Like, we've just been sort of seeking more, and these little things have dropped into our awareness over time, and then we've gone down the rabbit hole and followed those. Hmm.
I just found they all just come at the right time, and you just meet people on that journey then, don't you, when you've chosen that path to explore. And, you know, some people do think it's a bit, you know, out there, but it's not. It's become actually more
mainstream.
Like, oh yeah, we're seeing a spiritual coach, or we're having a soul reading to help me find my purpose. And like, it's just become, well, in my circle, it has anyway, become the norm that's what you do, because it's just another modality to support you in life. You know, like, just, it's like, you know, when alternate medicine, you know, was like, oh, that's a bit woo-woo. What do you mean you're taking homeopathic tablets and not going to a doctor? Mm. Are you crazy? Like, and now it's just like that next phase. Do you remember, like, there was that time where it's like people go like, what? Like, that's a bit crazy. Mm. And now it's normal to go get some extra help. And I think people realize that, you know, we are spiritual beings. It's what we are. We're having that experience on Earth. So we are going to seek that stuff. Whether it makes sense or not, we're going to seek it because we're interested.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And allowing it to drop into your life at the right time too is quite interesting. It's a really interesting concept. And the fact that she's now understands the importance of it and brings it in as part of her coaching too, and knows that it's an element that more and more people are seeking, and having a more holistic, again, it comes back to this blend, doesn't it? Yeah, because it is part of our experience and doesn't need to be addressed, but we've got a craving for it, don't we? A craving for something else,
yeah. Mm. But even the blend of meditation in corporate and in our business, right, it is linked to help us release that stress, which makes us better people. Forget just better performers at work, but just better people to be around.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
I think that side of it, where you're learning more about the spiritual side, it's also a form of making us release stress and become better people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the meditation gets into corporate world by talking about performance and stress release, and also giving an element of perspective. But then there's so much more to it, isn't there?
Yeah. 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 I can't wait to connect with her. I'm going to have to shoot her a message after this.
Yeah, yeah. And just as you were talking about people coming in at the right time, I also thought, you know, we've interviewed so many great people, and it's been great to be able to be exposed to so many people by doing the podcast, but it's almost like they come and go out of our lives too quickly. And I do want to dive in much deeper with a lot of them. But again, it just comes back to, you know, time to nurture relationships and to be able to actually get the full benefits of, you know, of what's out there. So,
mm. Yeah, I'm going to reach out to her, have a bit of a chat. Mm.
Yeah, it's always good to think about what partnerships might come through this as well. Like, when I re-listen to this, I'm like, gee, I really actually think that I might want to work with Kate and do some of the stuff she's doing with Coco Matrix. So yeah, I'll flag that for myself for the second half of the year.
Yeah, definitely.
So there you go, another one. So much more that we could have touched on, but there's only an hour.
I know, it just goes so quick, right?
Yeah.
When you ended it, I'm like, no, it can't be. Like, it felt like it was only like 15 minutes. The time had just gone so quickly. So yeah, great, great episode. I think it's a really, really nice one for people.
Yeah. Well, I really hope you enjoy your retreat.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll watch out for the videos. By the time this comes out, you'll be back to normal, back on the other side.
Yeah.
So we're in a little bit of a time warp. But yeah, I hope you really enjoy that. I also hope that people loved hearing Kate and would like to comment. We post these on our website at iqmeetseq.com.au. So comments there are great, but we seem to get more engagement on LinkedIn. So we put a post there as well. But of course, you can reach out to us directly and to Kate as well. But Ush, where can they find you?
Yeah, ush at ushdanek.com is the email, and EQ Academy
is the place.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And best email for me is jackie at legallywisewomen.com.au. So there you are. Catch you next time.